Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Back at it on 100% Hockey with Darren Millard and John Shannon. How was your weekend? Because it was Hockey Day in Canada. We talked about that going into
the weekend.
Did you follow the whole thing?
No.
I watched games. You can't help but watch games. You know, the afternoon game on Saturday afternoon. And then, of course, I mean, the two late games were pretty good stories. Seattle winning and then all the brouhaha at the end of the Edmonton-Vancouver game with Connor McDavid getting thrown out and then Tyler Myers getting thrown out. And they'll have verdicts on their hearings, which happen Monday afternoon before this show gets published. So
that was nasty. Both were nasty.
Yep. Yeah. Both. You know what? It's funny. Siplikoff got 3 games for that blindside hit to the head. Mm-hmm. So, and the guys in player safety are going to laugh if they listen. I have been a huge advocate that stick fouls are the worst thing the game has ever had. Forget about, you know, shoulder to head. But stick fouls, where you actually have a weapon and do the weapon stuff, drives me nuts. So I would not be surprised. I think they'll both get two games, but I'd give them both 3 games. And the Canucks and the Oilers play Thursday night in Edmonton. So I don't think either Myers or McDavid will be playing in that game. That's just my gut. I could be wrong by the time the decision from George Parros comes out.
One of the best rivalries in the game right now, going back to the Canucks' success against Edmonton and then the playoff series.
Yeah, it always festers. You know, those 3 teams in Western Canada, farther Western Canada, Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, those three teams don't – we always talk about Calgary, Edmonton, but Calgary, Vancouver can get vicious, and obviously Edmonton, Vancouver can get vicious. There's a real love-hate relationship between those 3 cities when it comes to the game, probably because there's a lot of transplants in each of the cities. A lot of Vancouverites in Alberta and a lot of Albertans in British Columbia. And it gets to the boiling point very quickly. Now, the Oiler-Canucks series last spring was as good as it gets, and it went to Game 7. And the stories within the series with the changing of goaltenders and Chris Knobloch giving Stuart Skinner a couple of days off was fascinating to watch. And the Canucks were a great story for the regular season they had. So you're right. It has become a very vicious series, as high profile as you can have in the game right now.
Stars General Manager Jim Nill standing by, and we'll get his opinion because I'm curious about because he played and he's watched the game evolve from a physical standpoint. But do you think there's any positive to what Connor's done in the last week? Not advocating for the elbow or the cross check, but does it give him a little bit of street cred in the game?
For who? For media, for fans, for the players?
For the players.
Oh, no. The players know. The players have always known.
Does it buy him some room? Does it say, okay, we don't want to.
The players have always known this about Connor McDavid. The players, the guys that he plays against, know what he can do. how competitive he is.
But we've never really seen the
No,
dirty side.
I don't necessarily. I again, you and me, the guy sitting in row 16 and in section 104.
Good
But
seats.
I know, well, expensive. But the players have seen it. The players, when they're up close, when they're sitting on the bench and they're listening to it, they know. We may appreciate it. We may say, "Wow, finally he shows some emotion." The players always see it. The players have
Emotion,
always
yeah,
known it.
but crossing the line, we don't see that very often. And
I saw he did a game. I did a game that he was in Montreal. I think he got suspended for it. Or I think it was Corey Perry. He actually jumped a little bit, and got a game. This is a guy that is so competitive. And I think that part of it, the only time we see it is when, he's in that frame of mind, then, you try to do an interview with him and he comes across as quite aloof. He's just so focused on winning the game and playing the game that he doesn't have time for, pleasantries.
Connor Garland, that was fantastic.
Oh,
I
see,
mean,
now you couldn't help but look at it and say, that was 1983.
yeah, just it was a tackle, and I appreciate it because there was so little time left. Why not do it? But
There's a lot of people that are going to say, "Well, you like that stuff," and there's also a part of the audience is, just let them play, just let them play. Don't get involved. Just let them play. Well, Wes McCauley and Chris Lee, just let them play. And now Wes McCauley and Chris Lee are getting barbecued in certain corners because they just let them play.
well, it wasn't a power play, wasn't going to impact the game at that stage.
Well, the Oilers had the puck all through that time, so it wasn't as if play was going to stop.
Right. Let's get to Jimmy, the Stars general manager, standing by as we continue on 100% Hockey with Darren Millard and John Shannon.
NHLShop.ca, the official online store of the National Hockey League. And Canada's largest selection of officially licensed NHL fan gear. With unique one-of-a-kind designs by Fanatics. And all the latest styles for every NHL team. Don't miss out. Shop now and get today's special offer. NHLShop.ca, a Fanatics experience.
When we started this podcast, this is one of the guests that I was looking forward to the most because he's such a gentleman whenever I run into him, but also a good friend of John Shannon's. And I'm curious, Jim Nill, as we welcome you into 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon, how did you first meet John? Because
He
your
won't. He
relationship
won't
does go
remember.
back.
He won't remember.
It
He won't
goes way, way
remember.
back. Way, way back. It goes to Vancouver days, actually.
Yeah, that's
Oh, is that
right.
right?
Yeah. So Jimmy was part of that famous 82 team that Roger was coaching. Actually, wasn't officially the head coach at the time, with the famous towel power, and won three rounds of playoffs and got to the Stanley Cup final. And I was lucky enough to be the producer for most of those games, and there was a small core of guys on that team that have become lifelong friends. Jimmy's one of those. Colin Campbell's another. Stan Smeal. There's a few guys on that club that are still around that we giggle a little bit. The fascination for me about that team, everybody talks about it being an underdog, and Jimmy, and you never played a team other than the Islanders that you didn't have more points than.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Everybody says, "Well, they upset everybody." No, you didn't. You beat teams you were supposed to beat.
No, it was a funny playoff that year. That's the year that LA upset at Edmonton. It's
Right.
funny how the dominoes just all fell. And even you go back to the Roger story, there's a story behind Roger becoming the head coach.
Well,
We had a game.
Harry got in a fight in Quebec City, right?
Quebec City, there was a brawl. Some players went up in the stands, and Harry got suspended. And I think it was a 10-game suspension. And so he said, "Roger, you take it over." He took it over. We kept winning, and Harry, being the all about the team man he is, he said, "You know what? We're going too well. Let's keep it going."
Okay, let's be honest. Where were you in the brawl in Quebec City?
I was being a gentleman, sitting on the bench trying to calm guys down.
What did Roger do that allowed you guys to go on such a run?
Well, Roger was ahead of his times. You know, you see coaching staffs nowadays, you know, the video, the presentations they do, the analytics work they do. Roger was doing that back in the 80s and doing it pretty well by himself and with a couple assistant coaches, no extra help, no high end. We're talking VHS days, you know, tapes. So you're talking going back to those days, but he was such a player's coach. You know, I was a third, fourth line guy, and you'd come in every morning after a game and he made sure that every player in that team felt like they had an input in that win and that, and he did a great job that way. He's a real gentleman.
Were you, you ended up in Detroit after that, if my memory serves me correct.
I went to Vancouver. Now we're going to get the airline miles going. I went Vancouver to Boston. I was in the Boston, yeah, for David McNabb.
You were part of the Peter McNabb trade.
Peter McNabb's trade, yeah. And then great story with that one. So I get traded for Peter. Back in those days, you know, Vancouver to Boston, we had to play, both had to play the next night. Well, Peter, he's 6'5", about 230 pounds. I'm 6 feet, 185 pounds. Didn't have, you know, the trainers didn't have the capability to do things. We had to play both the next night. I wore Peter's jersey. It looked like a dress on me. And Peter had my jersey. He said he could hardly stick handle. It was so tight. So we became good friends through it all. And it was funny how, yeah. So I went to Boston. Yeah, Boston. And then made it to, actually then Winnipeg and then Detroit. I was traded for Morse Lukowich. And that was the Winnipeg-Boston trade.
Morse Lukowich. Now you got Darren all excited about it. Something about Winnipeg.
No, I'm just yeah, thinking, yeah. Those are some McNabb and Lukowich. Those are some big names at that time.
Big
of
names.
The game.
No, they're big, yeah, big names. And I was the small name. And but you know what? Great journey. You know, we talk about Winnipeg. I love Winnipeg. I just had got married in my. Wife was from St. Louis. I traded Winnipeg and I said, oh boy, how's this going to work? We ended up loving it there. We great friends there. We ended up, even after I got traded from Winnipeg to Detroit, we still came back for all the summers for another 2-3 years and just loved it. And it's pretty amazing how these stories grow. And then Scott Oaks was three neighbors down and Willard Reeves, Ryan Reeves, mom and dad, were four houses down from us in Winnipeg. Yep. So it's funny how different connections over the years.
Some good road hockey games with Oakey calling it. So that's
yeah, that's good. Right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Don't give Scott too much credit for everything. now that he's a member of the Order of Canada, Jim.
Yes, and deservedly so.
Yes, he's done some tremendous work for his late wife Anne and for his son Bruce. Yeah. And but you know, now we have to call him Sir Scott. So it's tough.
And he'll hold us to it. Don't worry.
Don't worry. Yeah. How's your team?
You know what? Overall, general managers never happy. We always want more. Coaches always want more. But overall, I can't complain. We're going through a lot of injuries right now. Tough schedule, as everybody is. And we're keeping our head above water. We were on a big road trip out east. We went 4-1 on that trip, came back home, lost a couple games here, but we bounced back last night. So overall, our guys, we got a chance to win every night, and that's all I can ask our guys for. The coaches have done a great job. We've brought in five or six young players, you know, because of injuries and a little bit because of just growing your team. And the coaches have had patience with those guys, and they've really stepped up their game and helping to, you know, last night they got us a win. A bunch of the young kids scored. So it's been a good, it's not a transition year, but a lot of changes, which happens in this league, and our guys have adapted well to it.
You talk about the young kids, and they were on display big time last night, and they all seemed to contribute. But there was a play that did lead to a goal, but he wasn't directly involved. Wyatt Johnson on the wall, and he scooped the puck. I think it was with one hand. It was one of the weirdest plays to take out. I don't think I've ever seen that skill set before.
Yeah, Wyatt's, he's one of our up-and-coming young players. He's actually a big part of our core right now. You know, he's in his third year and been a big part of our team. And we're excited about his growth. He's going to be one of our leaders down the road. He's transitioning, you know, the Jamie Benns. You know, we go from Joe Pavelski's, you know, Jamie Benn, these guys, and Wyatt's kind of growing into that role. So we're very fortunate. Our scouting staff did a great job finding the gem in him. And, you know, big story behind him, that's COVID year. That and he's really come in and done a great job for us. He's a great young man.
Candidly, neither he nor Robertson got off to a great start. How do you explain that with a team that I think a lot of people had targeted as being one of the top five in the league this season?
Yeah, when we started the year, we know we're losing Joe Pavelski. You're talking 30 plus goals, so we knew it was going to be a big hole there, but we're banking on the growth of, you mentioned, the Robertsons, the Johnsons, Rupi Hintz, you know, all these players, were expecting them to take another jump. And Jason Robertson, to be fair to him, I got a call in July, and he had to have surgery on his foot. He had a cyst growing on his foot, had to have surgery. So he missed all summer training, wasn't allowed to train until 2 weeks in a training camp. So he missed all of training camp, never played any exhibition games, got off to a slow start. Now he's humming along. I believe he's got the most points in the league since December 23rd or something like that. So he's humming along pretty good now, found his game again. And then Wyatt got off to a little bit of a slow start. I think the pressure of the Four Nations tournament, you know, all that going on, a young player and a guy transitioning. You know, he's taking that next step. And now when we play teams, his name is circled. Teams know who he is. He's getting the best matchups, and that's part of the growth. When you become an elite player in the league, you got to find your way through it, and he was finding his way through it, but he's really come out of it now and playing very well.
Now, he lived with Joe Pavelski, right? So would this be the first year that he's sort of on his own?
Yes, you know, and that's another thing we talked about. You know, I sat down with Wyatt, and I talked about it. I said, you know, Wyatt, you didn't have the ability. I said, most guys your age end up going down to the minors for 1 or 2 years. You live on your own or with another buddy on the team. You got to line up your apartment. You got to, you know, do your heating bills. You got to learn to cook on your own. He lived with Joe Pavelski, and it was a great setup. It's what he needed in that. And after a game, after a tough loss, he'd come home and Sarah, Joe's wife, would have a nice meal cooked for him, and him and Joe would probably sit down at the kitchen table and they'd be mad. But by the time the meal's over with, they'd be laughing about something, and boom, you go to bed and you're up at it next day. He's a young man now living on his own and having to manage all these things himself. He's coming home after a tough loss and he's probably by himself, or maybe he's one of the other buddies, but it's different when you got to learn to manage it yourself, and he's still a young man. So he's going through that stage now, whereas other guys probably did it 2 years ago. But he's going to be better person and a better player for it. And like I say, we're starting to see that growth already in him.
One of the things with your young core is that, you know, you also have a young goaltender, but he seems to be, there's an appearance to me that he's mature beyond his age. And he's a little different than what a young guy like Robertson or a young guy like Johnston's gone through. Is that a fair assessment, or am I just reading the calmness of a goaltender?
No, that's a great assessment. He's, I believe he just turned 26, you know, and you go back to all the great goalies in the league, and, you know, you look at Connor Hellebuyck right now. You know, he's 32 or 33, I think, something like that. You know, Dominic Hasek, the Martin Brodeurs, these guys, they really hit their peak when they're in their probably the early 30s. And so Jake has kind of sped that curve up, and he is mature beyond his years. He's a great young man. He's one of the leaders of our team. Got a great calmness to him, and he's never flustered, and he's a guy that the coaches have to kick off the ice. You know, that's another thing we're trying to manage, is because of his workload, you gotta manage that better. And it's hard to do when a guy's used to, you know, he's got that work ethic in him. You got to pull him back a little bit, and that's been an adjustment for him. But we're very fortunate. I don't think he's reached his peak yet, which is exciting for us. But we like where he's at right now in his career.
I got some bad news for you. Connor Hellebuck's only 31.
Only 30. There we go.
That means he's going to haunt you for an extra couple of years.
And he's done that. And no, he's a great goalie. But as I mentioned, like you start hitting your 30, that's when you start to hit your peak. And that's where Connor's at right now. And that's what excites us about Jake is, you know, being 26. And he's got a lot of growth yet in his game.
Do you remember the first time you came across him?
Yeah, I was in Detroit, and he was with the USA program there, you know, the under 17 teams, under 18 teams. So started to see his early development in his game, then watched him when he went to college, and that's when we drafted him. He was at BU, and that's the year we drafted him.
How with the contract, he's got a chance to be like the franchise guy, on a franchise that's got a lot of good guys.
Yeah, no, it's no secret. You got to have good goaltending in this league. Everybody knows that. And we're just fortunate that we've got a goalie like him. He's mature, as I mentioned, beyond his years. He was one of those COVID type of players. It was interesting to see his path. We brought him into the bubble as kind of our third or fourth goalie up in Edmonton there. Ben Bishop got hurt, had a knee injury, couldn't play. So Khudobin took over. Now Jake had to be the backup. And he hadn't played a pro game in his life yet. I remember we threw him into a game. It might have been against Vegas, maybe. It might have been against you. We had those two exhibition games.
Oh, yeah.
He had two. I think he played one of those games, and he got blitzed. And that was kind of his first taste of pro hockey, kind of humbled him. But no pro experience. So we do that bubble. Then we go to that kind of, remember the mini bubbles? It's amazing you start thinking about these. You go back. Yeah, where we're all in kind of those satellite cities and
division
stuff.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he started playing. That's when he started getting his first games in. So he hadn't even gone to the minors yet. And we had Khudobin. Khudobin got banged up a little bit. So he had to play more than we wanted him to play. And he was okay, but he's a young guy. He hasn't really got much experience. So now the next year we finally get the reset. We're back to normal. And I was worried about Jake's development. Here he's been in the bubble, didn't play much. Then he's been in this satellite bubble that we did. Once again, didn't play much. And when he did play, as everyone knows, the NHL is a humbling league. And it can humble you. And he wasn't quite ready. So we decided to send him down. And that wasn't easy because here's a guy who's been in the NHL from day one. You know, he's in the best league in the world, best hockey league in the world. You're getting your five-star, six-star hotels, you're flying in charge and stuff, and now I'm asking him to go down to the minors because it's the best things for development. And I knew he wasn't happy, Jake. I have talked about this. He wasn't happy, and I don't blame him, but it was the best thing for him. We sent him down to Texas. That's our farm team in Austin. Got off to a great start there, and then, bang, we got two or three injuries back up here. Khudobin got hurt. We had Holtby with us. He got hurt. Jake became the guy. He's never looked back.
Right.
And so he really a quick start to his career, and he handled it well.
Yeah. There's so many things I want to go to. Like, I'd love the COVID stuff is fascinating to me because I don't think when we were going through it, I don't think any of us thought we were ever getting out of it. It was just so strange, but I want to go to Ottinger and his contract because for all the angst that Don Sweeney and Cam Neely went through and Swayman went through for their negotiation, you got the deal done in what appearances were like a week. Were you sitting there waiting for the Swayman contract to get done?
Well, we knew Swayman was going to become a comparable, very similar stats, same age, same path, college doing the same thing. So we knew that was going to become a comparable. We had Saros and Nashville as a comparable. So we knew where the market was at. And I went to Jake's representatives and Ben Hankinson, and I said, it was during the season. It was in October. And I said, I either want to get this done real quick because I don't want to, some players can handle this, some can't. And I didn't want to find out which way it was going to go. So I just said to Ben, let's try to get this done quick. We knew what the comparables were now with Swayman, Saros, all the other goalies that were out there. And so it was a week or 10 days. We got it done pretty quick.
And you've done that a couple of times with guys. Is that part of your business skill? Where does that come from?
Well, I think if you got the right comparables, it's hard to argue, you know, you get a situation in your career. Are you happy where you're at? You know, Jake's happy where he's at. I think if you respect, you know, whatever that situation is contract-wise, have a respect. We knew who the comparables were. They agreed with it, and it was like, either you can play it out, but you risk injury, you risk not playing well, or you can hit the home run. But Jake loves it here. He's a big part of our team, a big part of leadership, and I think that contract respected him. It's not like we're coming in $1 million underneath. We came in pretty close to that right from the start, and we said, let's try to get this done. So I think they respected it. We respect his trajectory and able to get it done.
But, sorry, Darren, even the guys that you did have a bit of a disagreement with, like Robertson in his contract a few years back, in the end, it disappeared after a while. And there is no acrimony, and everybody seems to be happy in your organization that way. Where's that business skill come from?
Well, I think I try to keep, I got a great staff underneath to do a great job. And that's one thing I've learned is surround yourself with good people. I got a great staff, and we try to keep it in its house as much as we can. I'm very open with the players, very open with their representatives, and that's kind of how we run our business. Our coaching staff operates the same way. And we just try to respect the individuals. That doesn't mean there's some battles. Don't worry. We have battles with a lot of these guys, but that's part of the business. But I think there's a respect on the player side and the agent side, and respect on our side, and we just try to operate that way.
Take a break, grab a coffee, and come back with more with Jim Nill on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. How have you seen the game change from those Vancouver days that we talked about off the top to now? Is it a comparable game?
I think it's comparable as far as the compete levels, the competition, how wired these guys are. You're talking the best players in the world, and they're all coming together. And what I love is how, and I always use this in our development camp, how the best players come together, and everybody that's on your team was the best player somewhere in their career. It was in right from Bantams to midget to junior, college, Europe, minors, wherever they come from. And all of a sudden you get to the NHL and you got to adjust your game. You're no longer, you're a leading scorer on your team. You're on every power play. You killed every penalty. And all of a sudden now there's guys that might be a little bit better than you or a better position to take some of those roles, and now you got to find where you fit in. And I always use a great comparable, Guy Carboneau. Mm-hmm. I never had Guy here in Dallas or anything, but played against Guy in that, and heard about his story. How he was a leading scorer in the Quebec League when he was drafted. Great player, and how he became known as one of the best shutdown checkers, whatever you want to call it. And then that's respectful. One of the best Selke players the game ever had, how he adapted his game. So here's the guy that goes from being a leading scorer everywhere he's been to became known as one of the best matchup guys there is in the game. And so he adjusted his game. He realized that if I was going to make it, I'm not going to be in the power play. And that's a big message we send to our players, especially in development camps. Make sure you take care of the details. You got to be good on the boards. You got to find a way that the coach is going to trust you to put you on the ice with a minute to go or killing a penalty or whatever. And once you figure that out, it's amazing how your game starts to evolve. And that's when you stick in the game. Kind of long-winded. I kind of got off the track there a little bit, but I'm talking about the game, how it's changed. I'm talking about the compete level and how you got to fit in. But I'm amazed nowadays at the skill level of these players. The skill level's off the charts. I see the way these guys can skate and handle a puck. Just little things. Watch the next time
Why Johnson play off the boards last night.
I'm just going to mention. Watch the next time a puck comes around the boards and how these guys pick it up under pressure and make a move at the same time. I remember I was a winger. I remember the puck coming around the boards, and I had wooden sticks back then, which really kind of helped you kind of buffer the puck down a little bit. These guys with these new sticks, how they can pick up pucks off the boards on their backhand and go to their forehand and make a move under pressure. It just amazes me. And that's just a little thing.
How much of the difference between when you played to today is equipment?
Equipment is.
Because when you, by the time you finished the third period, you were 12 pounds heavier.
Yeah, and I tell the guys stories about going to training camp. I remember going to training camp in St. Louis, Report Huron, at the old rink there. And you're there for about 3 weeks, twice a day, going through skates. And I remember going there. You'd have your two-a-days, early morning, probably 9 o'clock on the ice, and then you'd go from 9 to 11, and then you'd go have lunch, and you got to be back around 1:30 or 2. I remember going back there and try to put those skates back on, and they're wet, and you got skate bites, and everything's 100 pounds, and you just died. So the equipment, is it better? Yes, it is better, but still, you can't deny the skill level. These young, I watch just young guys at our practice facility, just young kids, playing peewee hockey and stuff. And I'm just amazed how they skate down the pucks. Like, it's just our skill level, our coaching. I think these young kids watching, the Hugheses play and the Matthews and the Marners play, and, Wyatt Johnson, how they pick this up at such a young age. It's amazing to watch.
The worst part about being in Port Huron during those practices was the equipment guys weren't able to wash your underwear in between.
No, yeah, you weren't. You didn't have time.
Stuff back on.
Yeah, you're putting everything back on. Everything was the poor goalies back then. The goalies' pads they're filled with that filler. I don't know what it was, but
horse hair.
They weigh about 100 pounds. Those poor guys and stuff. So it's amazing how the game has evolved that way. And nowadays, there's no such thing as two-a-days. First little while. And but we hardly practice now at all. Like, it's just the way it is. It's just a different game now.
Hey, were you in Dallas when Jimmy Lights went off on Sagan and Ben? Were you there?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. Yep.
By the way, our old pal Jimmy's going to the Dallas Stars Hall of Fame. That's good.
Yeah.
Well deserved. I watch Jimmy Ben now and I go, holy smokes, is that the same guy? Because he has become, he's as tough a player as you're ever going to see. But he's really become a true leader on this team, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. Jamie's, I always tell everybody, he's kind of a unicorn. He's what we're all looking for in the draft nowadays. It's hard to find the guy that has the skill level and the compete/toughness that he has. That's kind of getting out of our game a little bit. And they're hard to find. And he's a pretty unique player in today's game. He can play any game you want. He can play a skill game. He's on our power play. He kills penalties. And if the game gets a little out of hand, that he's as tough as anybody in the game and could take care of things. And he's a great young man. I was fortunate. I came in here. It was the second year in the league. We made him captain right after I got here. I thought he was our best player when I got here. And I just thought, he's going to evolve into that. Just seeing his character in that. And but really is really evolved his game. He's a great story, for younger players in the league. He transitioned. He changed his fitness level, his eating habits. He trained different. He got quicker. Just when it looked like his game was starting to, his skating was slowing down a little bit, he changed his train techniques. And here he is still playing as well as ever.
Did that come from the organization or did that evolve from himself?
That would evolve from himself. He sat down with our sports performance department and said, hey, how I got to change things here a little bit. He had hip surgery. That hurt him. He had the bad hips and had to have surgery done. That's probably 7-8 years ago. That slowed him down a little bit. And he adjusted right after that and has never looked back.
Speaking of toughness, I would say mean or dirty. And that's a compliment, like the biggest compliment I can give him. The scowl on his face, like he's a true throwback hockey player.
No, he is throwback. And I enjoy watching games. I always ask him after games. You can see him. He's either talking to a goalie or he's talking to a defenseman. I'm like, do you know the guy or are you really kind of abusing him? I don't know which way it's going, but he just kind of chuckles. And, to be able to play the game, to know that you've got that respect on the ice, and that's something that the fans, especially if you're watching a game on TV, you wouldn't notice. But next, if you ever watch a player like that live, just watch what happens in between whistles, what's going on or going by the benches. And it's always interesting to see the conversations that take place.
Listening to your original answer, I think you do miss the fact that we're not as physical in the game of hockey as we once were.
I don't know if I miss it. The skill levels got so high. I think we misinterpret it at times, might be the way to put it.
How so?
Well, when there's a hit, all of a sudden it's like it's got to be an automatic fight. Like I don't know where that came from. Like, I grew up in the era of if you had your head down and you got hit, as long as it's not a head hit or a bad vicious thing from behind or something. But when you get take a big hit, that was always kind of that's part of the game. And then you just played through it and stuff. And we've kind of got to the point where, and I understand where somebody gets hit, you're going to stand up for your teammate, but it's just part of the game. Hitting's a big part of our game. And we have those talks in gym meetings all the time, when we're talking about rules and stuff. We got to remember what our game is. It's still a physical game. It's highly skilled, high speed. When there's high speed, things are going to happen, but it still is a physical game. And there's nothing better than playoff hockey, and that's when the physicality comes out.
So that leads me to Darren and I were talking before we started about your division. How important is it to finish first? Or does it matter?
Think it matters anymore. It used to be home ice advantage was a big thing. It's not anymore. And it's interesting to see how that's evolved. I remember going into the old Chicago Stadium, going to the Montreal Forum. These were tough rinks to win in. The game's changed that way now. There's the players are very, and it must be part of the evolution of these players. These players play in the World Juniors now. They play in under 18s, and they're so galvanized and not intimidated anymore. I'm amazed by the young players. So, getting back to the question, home ice advantage isn't what it used to be. We didn't last year in the playoffs. We didn't win any of our opening night games. We lost every game, in every round. We didn't win, and we had home ice advantage the whole way through. You look at the good teams; they got great road records, and so the home ice advantage isn't what it used to be. Other than maybe for a coach for a line change here or there, it doesn't come into play as much. But I just think the teams are so close. We talk about parity. I don't want to over talk about that, but there is parity, and it's a fine line between everybody in this game.
Yeah, last year you won the division and you got the Stanley Cup champions to start. Like, that's not a reward at all. So I think you're right. I think you're right. Like, it doesn't matter where you finish in
No.
that in the Central or the Pacific right now.
Yeah, no, right now you're either we either we could be playing Winnipeg, we could be playing Colorado, could be playing Minnesota. Like it's they're all good teams. They're all good teams. And as we know, the playoffs, a lot of things happen, and you just got to make sure your game's ready at that time.
How many guys you got in the Four Nations?
We have the three Finns and then one American, Jake Oettinger. Yes.
So then you look at teams like Washington, who have had a great season, have no one.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of an advantage there, isn't there?
Well, it is gonna it's gonna be interesting to see the teams coming out. I believe Florida's got eight players, if I'm correct. That's played a lot of hockey. Is that gonna come into play or not? It's gonna be interesting to see. The wear and tear, or are these players gonna be so excited coming from this type of tournament, this environment, playing best on best? It's gonna be interesting to see where it's at. But right after the tournament, we're right at it. I know we the finals for the Four Nations is on a Thursday, and I think we play Saturday on the road. So it's going to be interesting to see how everybody adapts.
Do you
Were
think the
you?
break has affected more trade discussions? Do you think people are waiting or between now and the middle of February to do something and then can reevaluate over that break?
I think it's less the break and more the standings in the league. I was just looking at the standings here. You look at the Eastern Conference, and you got eight teams in it, and you've got six or seven teams that are in it. They're all within 4 or 5 points of each other. So, if you're one of those teams, making the playoffs is so important in this league and so hard to do. Only half make it. And when you have an opportunity to make it, hard to start selling off some of your best players or players that are on you can become UFAs. What message you're sending to the team, what message you're sending to your fans. So I think there's too many teams still in it. Those teams are going to have to make tough decisions coming up here right after the break is when it's going to happen. I think that when we get back end of February, that's what teams have to decide. Do we think we have a legit chance or not? But it's hard to be in a battle for playoffs and start selling off players. So it's too much to see where it all goes.
John, do you have anything more? Because I'd love to pick Jim's brain on a side topic.
Go ahead.
Okay. We talked about the Four Nations. 1980, you were at the Olympics for Canada. We all know the Miracle on Ice. I've never talked to somebody on the Canadian side about that experience. Can you walk me through what happened from Canada and being at the Olympics and that?
It was one bad goal from center ice. Come on now, let's be honest.
It was an icing.
And the Miracle on Ice and having a front row seat to that and what that was like witnessing.
Well, it was a great, what a great experience. I was 20 years old at the time, and to have an opportunity to play for your country, what an opportunity. We're all a bunch of college kids. Most of us were called from college, and we had a good team. You're talking Glenn Anderson, Randy Gregg, Paul McLean, Tim Waters. We had a good team, and Kevin Maxwell. We had a good team. We played the Americans, played them probably 15 times, 16 times in the year. We had a little bit of an edge. We probably won 10 of those 16. So, but real close teams. They're the same way. They're college kids down in the U.S. And so we go to Lake Placid, and I always tell the story. Lake Placid, probably one of the last years of the small Olympics. Anybody that's been to Lake Placid, it's a small town of 2,800 people, and located in the Adirondack Mountains in the middle of nowhere. And so it was really this. Probably the last of the small venues, but it was a great experience. We played the Russians just before the Americans played them. We lost 4-3. Probably should have won the game. We were in the same position as they were, and we lost 4-3. It was a heck of a game. Tretiak was in net. He ended up getting yanked against us, and that's why the other goalie played Michigan played against the U.S. is because Tretiak got yanked against us. And so I think they thought, and if you back up to before the Olympics, the Russian team, now that we're talking, you're talking U.S., Russia, government politics and all this stuff. It was the, they weren't friends. They go to MSG, play the Americans in MSG. I think they beat them about 10-1. It was just
10-3 was the 10-3 was the final.
10-3. The Russians just dominated. And this was a Russian team. You're talking Fetisov, Makarov, all these guys. You're talking big time team. And they were a machine. So they beat them 10-3, as you said. And everybody thought they're just going to run through it's going to be a gauntlet here that's going to run through the whole tournament. Well, all of a sudden we get up against them. We lose 4-3, probably should have beat them, had a good run. And then the Americans end up playing them and then win the game. Now, that wasn't for the gold. They still had to go beat some more teams and stuff to do it, but they did it. You mentioned about us. We were playing Finland. We had to beat Finland. If we get beat Finland, we're into the medal round. And there was an icing, and there was a race for the puck, and our goalie came out to handle it and missed it, and it went in the net. And that knocked us out of the medal round, so it was tough to take. But great experience. We lived in a penitentiary. They built a penitentiary for the the housing was going to be a new penitentiary. We lived in that, got to meet all the athletes and stuff. It was just a great experience. But another spinoff from this, and excuse me for rambling, I can get going here, is that what happened in 1980, probably for myself, probably isn't hockey in Dallas. I may not be a GM in Dallas right now. 1980, hockey wasn't even on the map.
Right.
It was nowhere. And especially in the U.S. It wasn't Canada, of course. But in the U.S., you had the original six teams. But other than that, hockey wasn't a big thing in the U.S. Well, here are these young college kids knock off the big, powerful Russian team. Hockey, that became the story. It's still a story today. And it was really the coming out for hockey in the U.S. Between that and Wayne Gretzky going to L.A., that's the reason there's hockey now in Anaheim, Dallas, Florida, Tampa, Carolina, these cities. That really, probably a good thing the Americans won, because I wouldn't have a job probably here down in Dallas. There's probably no hockey in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And that really set up for hockey to take its grassroots in the U.S., and here we are today.
It is something to think about. Because I actually think there was as many guys off your team in Placid that went to the NHL that went off the American team.
Yeah, yeah. No, we had a good team. We were good. You know, Glenn Anderson, Hall of Famer, Randy Gregg, great player. We had a good team. We were a real good team. And
And you guys, Canada was such a strange country with hockey that you couldn't even decide who the head coach was.
Yeah, we had three
coaches.
There were three coaches, all great. Lauren Davis, Claire Drake, Tom Watt. Great men, all great men and stuff. And we're based out of Calgary. And back, the Saddle Dome wasn't there. It was the Calgary. We played out of the old Calgary Corral. Yeah. And we lived in oil rig trailers outside of the corral. We were in these oil rig trailers that they put into a circle. And that's where we lived. We were in bunks together and away we went.
So going into the penitentiary wasn't bad.
No, yeah, penitentiary. That was like going to the Hilton. Yeah, it was, couldn't beat it. So it was, like I say, nobody really knew who we were, and we're happy as larks as could be. You know, here we are representing our country. But, you know, that was Father David Bauer was the one that kind of he convinced Team Hockey Canada, I guess it is, to let's get this going again. There was no official Olympic team back then. That was the first start of the Olympic team again. And Father David Bauer, bless his soul, great man. He was the one that put it together, and away we went.
I can just imagine those ATCO trailers outside the corral. mind you, I moved to Calgary that following summer to produce all the hockey in the West, and Cliff Fletcher's office was in an ATCO trailer, so it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, wasn't that bad. No, that's right. I was right at home. I was this oil rig trailers. Let's get it going. So it was it was a great experience. We had a great bunch of guys, we really came together as a team. And, I still remember we went to Czech Republic, the Rudy Provo tournament. That was our first big tournament playing against all these big European teams. It was Russia, Czech, Sweden, and ourselves. And Bob Orr happened to be over there. And he came in to talk to us before the game, get us all rallied up. And I remember talking to him afterwards. We lost that game. It was like 5-4, played against the big Czech team. And actually, we played a heck of a game. And we're kind of like, you know what? I think we can kind of play against these guys. But we talked to Bobby Orr after the game. And he said, I was so scared talking to you guys. He said, because I thought you're just going to get killed. You know, because you're talking the Czechs and the Russians back then. They were men. We're a bunch of college kids, just naive as can be, and didn't know what we're going to become. But that was kind of the galvanizing time for us. We realized that, you know what, we just played against the Czechs, we played against the Russians, we did well against them, we're gonna be okay. And we went from there.
Cool.
Do you miss the amateur days where it was just the national team compared to best on best?
You do for the I guess the Olympic spirit, but nowadays it's great to see the best on best. You can't beat it. You know, the Olympics has changed. You know, once the NBA players started to go in, that has changed. But for the spirit itself, it was great to, you know, it wasn't, you know, nobody had the advantage financially. You know, we're all in the same boat type of thing. And it was kind of neat that way.
Yeah, it was cool to see the throwback the last Olympics with that type of.
Yes, you're right. Roster. Yeah.
Hey, before we let you go, injury updates, Hintz and Sagan, where are they?
Yeah, Rupa Hintz, I think Rupa's a good chance he play. We play Carolina tomorrow, so good chance he plays tomorrow. He's not out long term, so I think he'll be ready. Got to get him going just before we play that big Vegas team and that, so that'd be good. Sagi, he's going to be sometime just before the start of playoffs or somewhere during the playoffs. It's hip surgery. I told everybody it's 4 to 5 months, 4 to 6 months. It depends on the rehab. So we'll see where this goes.
Hey, sorry. You just reminded me of another question with hip surgery. You surprised John Klingberg's coming back?
No, I'm not. I know John well. John, we've talked and stuff. He's a great young man. You know, even though we had our situation with that contract, we've kept in touch. We've just built a great relationship, and he's a very competitive guy. He's competitive. His hips, he says, never felt better. Now, not easy to do. It's a tough thing, missing a year and a half at his age. But if anybody's going to do it, John will do it.
I really thought that Shannon was going to ask about advice to have hip surgery. I thought that's where he was going with that.
We don't want to slow him down anymore.
Some of us don't have issues with our joints, Darren.
That's right. Yeah, you're stretching all the time. You're nimble.
Well, and I never played hockey. Jimmy, I never played hockey, so there was never any pressure points.
Jim, this is fabulous. I can't wait to see you Vegas and Dallas a couple of times in the next week. Run into you upstairs, and you're always so gracious with your time. Appreciate it today, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's been great being on. Take care.
NHLShop.com, the official online store of the National Hockey League and the world's largest selection of officially licensed NHL fan gear with unique one-of-a-kind designs by Fanatics and all the latest styles for every NHL team. Don't miss out. Shop now and get today's special offer. NHLShop.com, a Fanatics experience.
I don't know how he recalls all those stories like they were yesterday. And he apologized a couple of times. Jimmy, don't say sorry. Give us more of that.
Yeah. In fact, I was praying that some of his answers were longer.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't ready for my next question.
I'm sorry about stepping on you a couple of times, but I get excited about following some of these stories.
Yeah, and the challenge in doing a show like this, Darren, is that, you know, hopefully we have young people listening or watching. We know we have old coots watching or listening, and the old guys eat this stuff up. Guys over 40 eat this stuff up. It's whether you, I mean, there's a whole audience out there that have no clue that Jim Neal played in the National Hockey League. No clue that Jim Neal played in the Stanley Cup final. No clue that he played in the Olympic Winter Games. So it is kind of cool to sit and talk. And those guys, listen, any player of Jim's vintage, you sit and talk, they know every story from every stop they've ever had. Ever had. They do. That's just part of the nature of the game. And all that needs to happen is give them a spark of a reminder, and then boom, there they go.
I'm always impressed by how you phrase things, and there will be people who say, why do you call the Winter Olympics like that?
Because that's the official name.
Because, yeah, there's a way that you have to, if you're involved in the Olympic broadcast or the Olympic coverage, you have to refer to it in a very specific manner.
See, because the reality is, and not to get too technical about it, there is only one group of Olympic Games, and that's the Summer Games. We call them the Summer Games now, but they're the Olympic Games. Then it's the Olympic Winter Games, not the Winter Olympic Games, the Olympic Winter Games. And by the way, I didn't. Jim was on a roll talking about what a great city Lake Placid was, small market city to do the games in. He was wrong. The best Olympics of a small town was Lillehammer in 94, which, by the way, was the last time prior to us going to the NHL players going to Nagano, Japan. But we in Canada was one of the great stories of the 94 games hockey-wise. Because they went all the way to the gold medal game and got Peter Forsberg in a shootout. Could have won the gold medal.
Right around the time that the Olympics went to an every second year.
That was the first year of the 2 year gap, because
winter and summer used to be in the same year.
Yeah, 92 there was summer games, shouldn't say it that way, in Barcelona, and winter games in Albertville, France. And then we went to Lillehammer 2 years later. I went from doing the summer games in Barcelona to the winter games in Lillehammer.
That was fast.
It was hard. It was hard. 2 years was not enough time to prepare for an Olympic winter games. That was also the final year. That was also the final year of 14-day Olympic games.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was. Then in 98, we went to winter games, at least. I didn't do Atlanta. Winter games, we went to 17 days. Yeah.
17, yeah. Because that's one other thing. They start like 3 days before the opening ceremony.
Oh, yeah. They do now. They do now.
Is it ceremonies or ceremony? Ceremony?
Well, it's opening ceremony, closing ceremony, opening and closing ceremonies.
because you're always on the Stanley Cup final.
Final.
NBA finals.
I know. I've trained a few guys. Mm-hmm. I've trained not everybody.
And once you get trained, you never forget.
That's right.
I can tell you. Lake Placid, and then the next year was, or next Olympic
Sarajevo
was Sarajevo.
Yeah.
Two very different memories. Lake Placid still celebrated, and Sarajevo doesn't exist. It's just been left through the wars and bombed out and cast aside.
Yeah, well, that was a famous one from the American perspective, is that ABC, who was the Olympic network of record for years and years and years, sent a horde of people to Sarajevo because they thought they were going to have another miracle on ice. Mm. And the Americans did not make it to the medal round, and they sent 800 people home the next day.
Their first game after the miracle on ice victory at the Olympics was against Canada, and Canada won.
Well, that was Pat Flatley and Kerry Wilson.
Yeah. My buddy Darren Elliott was
The goaltender. Or as Cliff Fletcher would have called him, the goaler.
The goaler.
Yeah.
Off to a flying start. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun week.
I'm looking forward to it. It's a busy week here. We've got a game this afternoon, and we're flying all over the place. So we'll squeeze everything in that we can. I won't tell you that I appreciate it every show, but
don't stop. I'm tired of this already. Okay.
I did like today. Thanks for joining us on 100% Hockey with John Shannon and Darren Moore.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility, to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.